Are high-tech cars distracting older drivers? And more coming up on today's episode of Blazing Tech News. Hey, Gadgeteer, you're just in time for the latest episode in the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right, this is Blazing Tech News. My name is Taylor Merrick, and if you're new here, hit that subscribe button so that you don't miss out on the next episode. And well, if you're watching this via the YouTube channel, be sure and hit the like button, but only if you get to a point in the show that you actually like. And well, if there's nothing that you like, I suppose you could press the thumbs down button, but I would actually prefer a comment. That way I could find out maybe you were expecting a certain article to show up, or you wanted me to cover a certain news section that wasn't covered, or a game release, or something. If that's the case, let me know down in the comment section. It's always open, and if you're listening via the podcast, there's only less than a week remaining to nominate this show for an award. Yes, that's right. You can nominate this podcast for an award. Simply go to podcastawards.com. It'll only take you a couple minutes to register and nominate. Registration is free. We are located in the technology section of the nomination form, so go ahead and make your choices known today. The nomination slate will be wrapping up at the end of July. Voting opens the middle of next month. So, on the docket for today's show, well, it's an interesting new piece called "Are High-Tech Cars Too Distracting for Older Drivers?" We'll also be taking a look at the 2019 iPhone Photography Awards. Also, we'll be taking a look at Sony introducing a wearable air conditioner. I thought there were portable air conditioners before, but apparently this is the one that people are starting to geek out about. Also, we'll be taking a look at the LG Signbeam, an eye-popping 4K laser projector. You're going to be blown away by it, quite literally. Also, we'll be taking a look at, well, most people experience, quote, severe harassment when gaming online. This is a study by Business Insider. I know what you're going to say to when we get to that segment of this show, so we'll just wait till we get to that section of the show. And I'd love to hear your thoughts. You'll probably hear my thoughts, and you'll find out we probably agree on a whole bunch about that. We'll also be taking a look at, well, Wolfenstein Youngblood and what the co-op looks like, seeing as how Wolfenstein Youngblood came out this week, or is in the process of trying to remember it. I believe it came out. Anyways, we'll be taking a look at that. And finally, we'll be taking a look at Discord introducing a better way to organize servers. But before we can get to all of that, did you know that a study surveying 5,000 children on the video game and social habits came to a conclusion that people playing, well, those playing video games on a regular basis are more satisfied with their lives, are less prone to being hyperactive, have less emotional issues than those who don't play video games at all? It's almost like, consider it like a creative and a social outlet. You see, consider this. Back in the day, drinking was considered a social norm. Now, well, it still probably carries over, but to like a different degree, because we're like a couple generations removed from that fact. But people are social animals. It still holds true, and they'll hang out and interact with each other. Turns out, when you're playing a video game, you're not just sitting in a hole all by yourself. If you're especially online or doing any multiplayer game, you're talking to people. Heck, in Fortnite, you're doing that. Unbelievable! It's incredible. And, well, keep this in mind whenever the next time, I guess, your parents go around and say, why don't you go out and interact with people and socialize more? You'll be like, Mom, I was listening to the show the other day. Apparently, there was a study. 5,000 children played a video game. Turns out those who did are more satisfied with their lives, less prone to being hyperactive, and have less emotional issues than those who don't play video games at all. So how about I'll just play a video game, I'll set a limit on it, right? And outside of that, I don't see any problem with that. So with that out of the way, let's see what's up in today in tech history. right, today is July 25th, 2019. On this day in 2008, the FCC approves the merger of the two satellite radio companies, Sirius and XM, thereby creating Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Whoop-de-doo! And that's probably one of the least radio stations I've ever listened to. Although, I take it back. The first time that I got my new car, it was an Elantra, and hot off the dealership, only had 33 miles to its name. I'm the first and only owner of it so far. They went, "Hey, you get like a free 3-month subscription with the to Sirius XM Satellite Radio with the purchase of the car. Do you want to redeem it?" And I was like, "I'll take a listen to it. What the heck?" I did, and I was like, "I'm not impressed." I mean, there are only a couple of channels that I liked, and then I decided, is this really worth paying for a couple of channels? I bet I could probably get those channels online if I really, really wanted to. And other than that, there really was no definitive reason for me wanting to continue using it. So I just discontinued it. Long story short. Also, on this day in 1990, Microsoft reported revenues of more than $1 billion for its fiscal year 1990. But its spectacular growth didn't stop there. Founded in 1975 by Bill Gates and Paul Allen, Microsoft has continued its dominance of the computer industry since then. So, in case you didn't know, you're like, "Hey, didn't the tech company hit $1 billion? Yeah, Microsoft did. In 1990. So, food for thought. With that out of the way, let's head on over to today's feature story. Ooh, did you see? If you're listening to the podcast, you have absolutely no idea what just happened. I mentioned this on Twitter earlier today. Head on over to youtube.com/technewsgadget to watch the video portion of this show. On Twitter, I actually teased the fact that I had some upgraded scenes and layouts going on. It's not going to affect the audio quality of the show at all, but I'm interested what your thoughts are on this new look. I'm in a completely different location, albeit not that much, and you can actually see more of the article. So what do you guys think of the new changes? Be sure to let me know down in the comments, good, bad, or otherwise. Always love hearing your feedback, and really appreciate it. Helps me figure out what you guys like and don't like, and then we can adjust accordingly to there. Well, question is, are high-tech cars too distracting for older drivers? Well, it was a comedy of errors, said a 71-year-old participant in the study, which included programming a car's infotainment system. I guess a new AAA... there's somebody calling me on the phone. I can't answer it. Wait until now to call me on the phone. A new AAA car safety study suggests that tech-laden smart cars are too distracting, which can undermine efforts to keep roadways safe, especially when those getting behind the wheel are aged 55 and over. Cars today boast all kinds of bells and whistles unavailable to previous generations. Everything from seat warmers to windshield wipers that automatically turn on when it rains, interesting, to sketch pads that enable drivers to doodle as they drive. However, according to the findings of the study conducted by researchers at the University of Utah and carried out for the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety, older drivers find many new smart car features to be more demanding and confusing than do younger drivers. The technology we're putting in cars today are unsafe for all of us to use, especially for older adults, said Jake Nelson, AAA Director of Traffic Safety Advocacy and Research. Our advice to consumers is that just because technology is built into your car doesn't mean that it's safe to do those things. In the study, drivers were divided into two groups, a younger group aged 21 to 36 and an older group aged 55 to 75. Each driver was asked to drive a 2018 car equipped with a number of smart features, including navigation screens and voice activation controls. Among the tasks drivers were asked to complete, sending a text message, programming music, programming a navigation system, and placing a call. Although I kind of wonder, why was the part of the study determined while driving? Like, was this all you had to do it while driving? And so not the smartest thing, especially if you haven't, you know, properly sat down in a car to figure out how this all operates, which you should do When you pick it up off the dealer, drive it off the lot, or testing it around, or when you finally bring it home and crack open the manual, yes, open the manual, figure out how your car works and what the features do. Overall, the study found older drivers experienced higher levels of cognitive and visual demand compared to younger drivers. These differences were even more pronounced for older drivers when completing any in-vehicle information system task, or IVIS. But the study found that older and younger drivers both found some tech features challenging and time-consuming. Given the demands associated with these tasks, drivers of all ages should use those infotainment technologies only for legitimate emergencies or urgent driving-related purposes. Oh, wow, we get the rest of the point here. David Strayer, a professor of cognition and neuroscience at the University of Utah and one of the study's authors, said that the study confirms that for many drivers, technology-laden vehicles have too much going on. And I agree with that to a point. We found older drivers who, for the most part, are the consumers who have the resources to purchase these newer vehicles and are having more difficulty using these features than the 20 and 30-year-olds. Well, duh, obviously. smart cars are making us more distracted or more of the time, Strayer said. The car is now becoming as complicated as a complex plane in many cases. You've got 200 buttons and all kinds of screens and voice commands. This is when I take it the first part of the sentence that he wanted to say, but he probably couldn't say for the quote's sake, was smart cars are making us more stupid at times. Anyways, smart cars are making us, more distracted. Paul Brown, a 71-year-old retired attorney who resides in Salt Lake City, is one of the drivers who took part in the study. It was a comedy of errors, he said, of the displays and lights that he was asked to respond to as he drove. I don't need something that is going to do everything for me and distract me while I'm driving, Brown said. Quite frankly, when I was driving, I found myself feeling as if I was driving dangerously because of all those distractions. Here's a great idea. Drive one of those self-driving smart cars. You're basically going to do nothing. I mean, you're going to be attentive enough and keep your eye on the road and intervene if necessary, but a lot of the burden's right off your shoulders, so maybe if you're part of the older age group, maybe you should just get like one of those Tesla smart driving cars or one of those. You don't even have to worry about driving, and then you actually do have the time to figure out what the heck the infotainment system does. Brown said that he found the large display screen situated to the right of the steering wheel in the cars he drove for the study especially distracting. The article goes on to explain some things, but I think we get the point. The point is, car manufacturers, maybe you're putting a little bit too much tech into it, and for the most part, young and old, but especially on the older side, the learning curve is a little bit more challenging. If you're going to do something, make it simple, make it easy. Here's a great idea. See if you can do it in 2 or 3 taps, period, at most. If you can't do that, it's not worth programming and putting into the car. If they can't call this person that they wanted to, don't even do it. If they can't text the person, don't even do it. If they can't figure out the navigation system, don't even put it in. Or seriously figure out the UI system and make it a lot more simpler. That's one of the main reasons why the iPhone was such a hit, is because it was simple. It was intuitive. People knew what to do. Right. So that's my thoughts on it, at least. As always, I would love to hear your thoughts on this. Comments down below on the YouTube video if you're watching, and if you're listening to this on Twitter, if you're listening to this via the podcast, head on over to Twitter. We are at Tech News Gadget, and leave us your thoughts there as well. Good, bad, or otherwise, are older drivers distracted, or maybe they should just take the time to pull over to the side of the road, or before they leave, figure out how these things work. For the most part, even though my car is, quote, smart, and there are some smart features in it, I don't really take advantage much about any of them. I'm still old-fashioned that way. So with that out of the way, let's head on over to the next article we got lined up. All right, the 2019 iPhone Photography Awards has been announced, and there is a grand prize-winning image that was shot on an iPhone X. Now, we're looking at the image right now. Speaking of which, do you guys like the fact that you're able to see more? Pretty cool, huh? Now you don't just get this little box with the news that you're sitting there and squinting at and trying to figure out what in the world text is he reading on the screen. Good, bad, or otherwise, let me know your thoughts if you're liking this new scene layout. I know I am. It's a lot simpler. The 2019 iPhone Photography Awards have been announced today. The winning photographs cover a range of categories and were shot on everything from an iPhone SE to iPhone XS. Follow along for a look at the stunning images that won awards this year. Photographers from more than 140 countries entered images shot on iPhone in this year's contest. So the IPPA Awards is proud to announce the winners of the 12th annual awards. Winners were selected from thousands of entries submitted by iPhone photographers all around the world. Grand prize, along with first, second, and third place awards, were given for Photographer of the Year, as well as awards for photos in 18 different categories ranging from abstract to lifestyle, nature to portrait, and more. And now, in case you're wondering, no, we're not making this up. These awards have been going on for 12 years now. And seriously, yes, if you have an iPhone, you can enter. And if you're a photographer and you know what you're doing, you can win an award. Anything is possible. Anything is possible. I'm not even making this up. The grand prize winner and Photographer of the Year award goes to Gabriella Sigliano of Italy for her entry Big Sister. First, second, and third place Photographers of the Year awards go to Diogo Lage of Portugal for his image Sea Stripes, Yulia Bravia of Russia for her entry of Sorry, No Movie Today, and Peng Hao of China for his image Come Across. And first up, here's Big Sister, which won the grand prize this year. I know you're sitting there going, this looks like this was shot on a really nice high-quality camera. I wonder which one it was. It was an iPhone. This that I'm holding in my hand, an iPhone. iPhone. So with that, they have a little description of the image going on there. It was shot in Zanzibar, Africa, shot on an iPhone 10. Here is first place Sea Stripes, shot on an iPhone SE. Yeah, an iPhone SE. That's pretty impressive. It was taken in Santa Rita Beach, Portugal. Second place with a surreal iPhone 7 Plus, shot in the rain. Interesting. It was a hot summer day in Rome, Italy. Even the asphalt was melting. We decided to escape from the city center to see the ancient trees of the Borghese Gardens and watch an Italian movie. But when we arrived, it started raining, and I took this photo. Rounding out Photographer of the Year awards was Peng Hao in third place with a stunning image taken at Burning Man. Here you go. There's that one. Yep. This was in the desert in Nevada at the Burning Man Festival. Stood on a bridge and saw two people lost in a sandstorm, but after a while, something very special came along. A huge silver ball. Cool. So check out all the other award-winning photos and honorable mentions in categories like abstract, animals, architecture, children, floral, landscape, lifestyle, and more on the IPPA Awards website. And here's another really neat photograph that was called Untitled, which won third place in the children's category. Yes, shot on an iPhone. Have I emphasized that enough? Man, it's good stuff. So if you guys like photos and photography and getting good cameras, hey, you could use simply an iPhone, enter the awards, and win. It's been going on for 12 years at this point, so congratulations to all the winners out there. By the way, if you want the links to everything that we've covered today, all the articles, show notes can be found at technewsgadget.net, and the articles are linked in the show notes for today. And you can click away and watch and look and scroll and swipe and whatever else your heart desires. Let's head on over to the next article. So, we got some gadget news for you. I guess Sony is coming out with a wearable air conditioner. And people are, like, scrambling. They want it right now. But it's not due to come out until March 2020. But there is a catch. You see, the new Sony Rion Rocket is a body-cooling wearable that promises to chill you out in the heat. Folks suffering in a current heat wave sweeping the world can all agree It sucks to be caught in between air conditioning havens, but if you're like me and your job entitles you to go outside for 6+ hours a day, you just say, well, I guess I'm going to suck it up, Buttercup, and I'm going to enjoy the weather outside. You won't die. Matter of fact, I prefer the heat to the cold, simply because I know I have an air-conditioned vehicle I can go to, and I'm usually able to tolerate the heat more than freezing. And you say, well, you live in Wisconsin, right? Doesn't it get really cold up there in the winter? Yeah, it does. It's not fun, but I'll survive it if I need to. But let's just say when the heat comes along, it's a good thing. So, sadly, the device isn't for sale yet. It must be crowdfunded first, and if it makes its goal, currently standing at 44% funded, it should ship by March of 2020. But the promise of mobile cooling is a little bit too tantalizing to ignore here, seeing as we're in the middle of summer. After hundreds of simulations, Sony estimates that the Rheon Pocket should be able to cool a user's body temperature by 13 degrees Celsius, or roughly 23 degrees Fahrenheit, according to Gizmodo. The device can help out on cold days too, if you remember what those are. I know it's hot right now. Warming up a body by 8 degrees Celsius or around 14 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, how does this work? It's a portable AC in a proprietary shirt. The Rheon Rocket itself is an 85 gram pod the size of a garage remote that slips into a pocket of a specially made shirt right on the top of your spine. Actually, so I guess it goes like right back here on the back. You can control it via iOS or Android phone, and an auto mode is coming. The battery lasts 24 hours with a 2-hour full recharge. Starting price for a Rheon Rocket on its crowdfunding page is currently 14,080 yen, which is around $129 US, 104 pounds, and 186 Australian, though you can pledge more to get extra shirts and pockets. No, it might not work with a regular or do-it-yourself altered shirt. The device seems to sit in a specifically cut slip with a tiny cutout for it to vent. It's unclear if the device is as effective if placed elsewhere. Now, you could pay less for the Rheon Rocket Lite, a version with lower functionality. This model starts at around 12,760 yen, which converts to 117 US, 944 pounds, and 168 Australian, although it only has manual controls. But, yeah. Rheon Rocket, it's coming. So if this is something that you want to, by all means, crowdfund it. Crowdfunding has done very well for a lot of gadgets over the years and brought a lot of them to the mainstream. But if you want to be one of the first, this gadget you might want to keep an eye out on. And obviously, as I said before, links to this article is in the show notes, and they do have a link to the crowdfunded project, which is at first-flight.sony.com/PJ/Rheon Pocket. Link will be in the show notes. All right, some more gadget news. Do you guys like a laser projector? I'm not talking about any laser projector. I'm talking about a 4K. It's called the LG Sign Beam. It's an eye-popping 4K laser projector at an eye-watering price. Now, remember, I covered this earlier in the year when LG launched its second-gen Sign Beam laser 4K at CES 2019. We are left to speculate how much the innovative short-throw projector would cost. And right, we were like, well, when's the launch date and when's the pricing going to be? Well, we have the answer for you guys. The new LG Sign Beam will set you back a whopping $6,000. Around double the price of its predecessor, but it looks worth it. What do you get for the $6,000? Well, for starters, this new Sign Beam 4K uses short throw technology, which means it can project large scale images over incredibly small distances. For instance, you need to place the projector just 2 inches away from the wall to achieve a 90-inch diagonal image. Looking for an odd immersive viewing experience? Well, if you place the projector a mere 7 inches away, get this, you can project an enormous 120-inch image, a fantastic feature for smaller homes that can't accommodate a huge amount of space between a projector and your wall. And, oh, man, The images, which are huge, by the way, promise to be super impactful too, with a 2500 ANSI lumens and ultra HD 4K resolution and a wide color gamut to ensure a high degree of realism and vibrancy when reproducing your films. New to this generation of the Sine Beam projector is voice activation technology. Using LG's artificial intelligence technology ThinQ, you'll be able to use simple voice commands to control the projector. With that as well, it comes packed with a web OS built-in, giving you the ability to watch content from Netflix and YouTube without the need for a smart TV or streaming device. Like its predecessor, the latest Sine Beam Laser 4K sports a compact fabric-covered design that should fit in nicely to pretty much any style of decor. Now, despite all these cool features, there's of course no getting away from all that considerable price tag. After all, most of the best projectors that at least TechRadar has reviewed here come in at more than $2,000, and some as low as $650. But whether you feel those features are worth the money largely depend on how highly you value your home cinema experience, and if you have a wall or projector screen big enough to handle all of it, which probably at this point would be like wall, just a plain wall that you can do 90 to 120 inch screens on. But if you still watch Blu-rays exclusively and hate the always listening feel of voice assistants, you might want to look for something a little less expensive to blow your films up to big screen sizes. But yeah, there it is in all its glory. I mean, if you want to drool over something, this is something worth drooling over. I know there's not a lot of 4K content out there. It's starting to get up there more and more. But if you want to test it out and probably have a gadget that'll at least last you into when 4K is more mainstream than it is now, and you have a lot more content to choose from, this will probably be an investment worth getting and holding on to and not switching over to the newest, latest thing. I mean, for crying out loud, you just blew $6,000 on a TV. Think of it that way. And you're not fighting over, you know, other people at Walmart and smashing TVs in half because you didn't get yours. So keep that in mind. You won't have to worry about all that. It's a projector, for crying out loud. You'll just have to make sure you have a nice, crisp wall to project it on. All right, over to some gaming news. Most people who play video games online experience severe harassment. But here's the funny thing. Remember with the Did You Know study? Apparently they find it more satisfactory life stuff. They find, I don't go back to the beginning of this episode and listen to it. You'll find out. You're like, well, you just said that video games are good. And now you're saying that it's bad. Yes, because everything's bad. If you eat too much honey, you will throw up. In case you didn't know that, now you know. And if you don't believe me, go ahead and try it out for yourself and let me know. I guarantee you, between that and chugging a gallon of milk, you're going to guarantee yourself to throw up. But don't do it. Don't do it. It's not worth it. Studies have been proven it will happen. But I guess a new study from the Anti-Defamation League says that 65% of people have experienced severe harassment when playing video games online. Severe harassment, according to the ADL, includes physical threats, stalking, and sustained harassment. The study also says that 74% of people have experienced at least some form of harassment when playing games online. So I guess the study says they surveyed little over 1,000 people between 18 to 45 years old. They conducted these surveys between April 19th and May 1st of this year, and the study revealed that while 53% of people who reported experiencing harassment said that they were targeted for their race, religion, ability, gender, orientation, ethnicity, 38% of women surveyed said they were harassed on the basis of their gender. It just goes on. A whole bunch of people were harassed. 29% of people surveyed said they were doxxed. No, don't play. No, stupid advertisements. Worse, doxxed, I guess, while playing games. In case you don't know what that is, doxing is when someone broadcasts personal identifying information about someone, like their real name, address, phone number, and more. And just keep an eye on, you know, keeping that kind of information private and not easily accessible. And, let's see, it goes on to also say, the religious people were harassed as well. But to be fair, 88% of people surveyed said they've also experienced positive social interaction when they've played video games online, with 51% saying in the survey that they've made friends. So keep this study in mind and keep it with a grain of salt. It's not all bad news for gamers. It's, if anything, it's part of the culture. It's just, you know, to some extent, it doesn't need to be. Not everybody on the internet needs to be anonymous trolls. Some people are just having a bad day, so they decide they're going to talk stupid that day. Does that mean that you need to? No, probably not. I mean, there are ways to diffuse situations and do it pretty quickly. You just need practice. And it becomes predictable after a while. Like, oh, look, somebody's having a bad day, and now he's throwing a fit, and he's calling me out. Well, I'm just going to say I'm dumb, because I'm the dumb one. And he's going to be like, yeah, yeah, take that, dummy. I'm like, yeah, dummy. And don't actually call him dumb, because then he'll say, Jim, 3 o'clock, I'll meet you out back. it just seems to be typical. People are going to be stupid. Most of the time, ignoring them does, you know, the best part. Not encouraging, you know, continued behavior or reacting in kind, because a lot of times people just want that reaction. And like many streamers that you've probably heard over the years talking to you about this, and YouTube videos that you've probably watched, don't feed the troll. This is common knowledge. Don't feed the troll. Just ignore them. If anything, I guarantee you, if you turn off the game after that match, or if it becomes too much, you can just stop playing, close out from the match, go for a walk, go do something else, clear your head, come back, you'll be feeling a lot better. If you need to stay into the match till the end of the game, try and get it over as quickly as possible. There are ignore and block options so that you don't even have to listen to the person. Don't even engage with them or talk back to them. And they'll find out that they're talking to a brick wall pretty quickly. And then you just move on with life and you say, oh, that's nice. And then, you know, you go take your break from the game. You come back refreshed, and it's nothing new. Nothing new. But, yeah, I guess they go on to explain more community standards that were changed for Xbox users. I covered that in May's episodes for the show sometime. I guess similarly, Sony has an online guide to blocking players on the PlayStation 4 after being inappropriate or abusive. Steam also offers options as well, but if you've ever wondered about what to do about online harassment that may occur outside of these gaming platforms, there are a couple of articles and guides on how to handle online harassment and what to do if and when it happens, and if you feel like you need to do anything. If most of the time, don't feed the troll and just walk away. It's not worth it. You'd be a lot better for it. Moving on. So, you know, Wolfenstein Youngblood? Well, that game that came out? Well, here's what the co-op version looks like. And it starts off, you really shouldn't be playing Wolfenstein Youngblood by yourself. The new first-person shooter, out on PC today and on consoles tomorrow, is designed from top to power armored toe to be a cooperative experience. It's a different kind of Wolfenstein game, full of the same dense, meaty, Nazi-killing action you might recognize from the previous Wolfenstein entries, New Order and New Colossus, but built for two. Keep that in mind and you'll probably like it a lot. And they do have in-game footage to demonstrate how that works. In the footage atop this post, you'll see Kotaku video producer Tim Rogers and Joshua Rivera, the author of the article, playing through Youngblood's opening mission, which introduces you to the game's premise. You and your co-op partner are Jessica and Sophia Blazkowicz, the twin teenage daughters of previous Wolfenstein protagonist BJ Terribilli Blazkowicz and his wife Anya. After BJ goes missing in Nazi-occupied 1980s Paris, Jess and Soph decide to steal some power armor and go and find him, while killing Nazis as they can, starting on a zeppelin called the Nachfelter, I guess. So, they have more footage coming, but some thoughts they have. They're about 6 hours in. First, think twice about playing Youngblood solo. Everything about its design is geared towards co-op play, and while you can get by with an AI-controlled sister, you won't be able to strategize much and it'll take longer to clear out enemies. Two, sadly, there is no couch, co-op, or LAN support. You've got to team up over the internet, and you won't need an internet connection if you're playing solo. 3, you cannot pause the game even in single player. Levels are, however, occasionally broken up with doors that need to be opened by both sisters together, and the rooms immediately after them are generally safe places for taking a quick break. And another point, 6 hours into the game's campaign, I can tell you that you shouldn't expect much story in Youngblood's early hours. Fans of the New Order and the New Colossus might find it disappointing. Also, the game looks pretty short and sweet, geared towards replay and revisiting maps and missions with new twists and goals, and lots of collectibles. Small but dense, and finally, I guess, shooting them up, those people back then, remains a joy, and you'll do it a bunch in this video game. So, with that, well, there's Youngblood for Wolfenstein, and take it as you may. I know that there might have been a couple of you interested. If you're not, just let me know, but if you are interested and you want to keep up to date, let me know in the comments, either way. And finally, Discord is introducing a better way to organize servers. Yep, starting today, there is an easier way to organize your servers on chat platform Discord, using folders. Now, if you're a member of many Discord servers, you'll notice that organizing them is a bit of a pain if you haven't already. Previously, you could just move server icons in your sidebar to reorder them, but if you had more than 10 or so, it became hard to find the one you want. Now you can drag and drop servers into folders and rename or color code them however you want. For example, you could create a folder for gaming servers or one for servers that you mod. You can dismiss notifications by folder so that you don't need to go through servers marking channels as read one by one. Better server organization is one of the top user requested features. A Discord spokesperson said, the folders you create will be synced across your devices too and will work on browser, desktop, and mobile. And for those of you wondering, the servers folder feature is out and available now, and I actually have a YouTube video that goes along with it, but we won't be playing that, but the link will be in today's show notes. Exciting, right? I'm excited. I use Discord. I'm still trying to figure out how to use it a little bit more. I get confused by it, and then I keep getting logged out of Discord on my phone, so it's really frustrating because I'm like, what was my password again? Because when I do it on a desktop, it just pops right open. I'm fine. But when I'm on my phone, I'm out and about, and I'm trying to keep an eye on things, it drives me nuts. Because I'm like, what's going on? Hopefully, I figure it out sooner, or my phone does. Otherwise, I'm going to throw my phone out the window, and I'm looking right at my phone as I'm saying it, too. So you better listen, stupid phone. Yeah, take that. It don't worry, it's listening. It knows better, right? I don't know. Time will tell. All right, and with that out of the way, that wraps up this episode of the Latest in Tech News. Thanks for tuning in, guys. By the way, what did you think of the new scene layout that I had for you? Good? Bad? Otherwise, did you like it? Let me know down in the comment section. New episodes every weekday, except, I'm going to take time to let you know tomorrow might not have an episode, or it will be an extremely short one. I have a meeting coming up tomorrow evening. That's like right over the time that I record this entire show for you guys. So there might not be an episode tomorrow, but if there is, it'll be a very short one, maybe like 2 or 3 articles. In either case, follow Tech News Gadget on Twitter to find out. I'll post whether we'll be having a show or not there. Latest in Tech News can be found on every major platform, including Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, Stitcher, Overcast, and more. Now, if you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to let us know by clicking that like button down below and by leaving a comment. And if you're listening via the podcast, it would be greatly appreciated if you leave a review. Thank you for those who have. It means a lot. It really does, because that's what keeps me going. Also, double check that you are subscribed so that you don't miss the next episode. I'm your host, Taylor American. Remember, for latest in tech, gadgets, and gaming news, visit technewsgadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys, and I'll see you on the flip side.